The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by 1st of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Now, the fallout from the resignation of Matt Hancock continues, with MPs returning to Westminster with a new health secretary who will be up in the Commons this afternoon, as will Boris Johnson. James, how are things looking after a pretty torrid few days?
So I think all eyes are on Sajid Javid today in the House of Commons. I don't think anyone is expecting him to announce that any of the restrictions will lift early on July the 5th. But I think people will be looking for a clue as to how comprehensive the reopening on the 19th of July will be. Now, I think if you look at what Sajid Javid has said about COVID in the past, what some of those very close to him who used to work for him are saying about his position, I think it's clear that he is slightly more bullish about easing restrictions than Matt Hancock was. So it probably changes the balance within the COVID over kind of key committee, that cabinet committee that takes these decisions, in favour of a more comprehensive reopening on the 19th of July. I mean, the problem with the government is that the fallout from Matt Hancock's resignation has not finished yet. I mean, there are still going to be more questions about how his friend got appointed onto her taxpayer-funded role. And I think there'll also be questions about, you know, how many other ministerial offices have security cameras in them. And there will be questions about, which Labour will try and push on, as to why Boris Johnson didn't sack Matt Hancock and why Number 10 are being quite clear that Matt Hancock resigned rather than being resigned.
Katie, what kind of a health secretary is Sajid Javid going to be? He's obviously been Home Secretary, he's been Chancellor. What do we think he'll end up doing with the NHS to tackle the backlog, for instance? There's big NHS reforms coming up. What sort of a health secretary is he going to be?
So I think the first thing to note is that, as you touch on, the fact that Sajid Javid is very experienced when it comes to the fact he's held lots of incredibly serious ministerial roles, Secretary of State positions before, for a brief period, even as Chancellor. And I think that means that he was in many ways quite an obvious choice to go in to be Health Secretary, although there were lots of names going around, such as Nadeem Zahouri, the Vaccine Minister, Ed Argar, Minister in the Department of Health. I think that for those people, it would be a big promotion. I'm sure they would have risen to the occasion, but ultimately you're having to get to grips with a more senior role than you previously held when we're still in the middle of a pandemic. Hopefully the easier end of the pandemic, but you know, a lot's going through your intray, including the backlog and all these daunting tasks. So I think that by moving Sajid Javid, and it's not the most senior role he has held before in cabinet, you have someone who isn't going to have to get their head around the way things work in terms of the ministerial aspects, but obviously this is a new brief to him. And I think that what everything dots were trying to work out, because there's a few ways of looking at it. So when we're talking about, I suppose, COVID backlog, but also social care, which, you know, is one of the issues coming up. There was due to be a meeting last week with Matt Hancock talking about that with Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak. Now, whenever that meeting may happen, because we've been waiting for a while, it's going to be Sajid Javid. Is his experience in the Treasury going to mean that he is, you know, arguing for a lower cost approach to social care, because we know he has in the past been a fiscal conservative? Or does it mean he's actually going to be more successful in challenging Rishi Sunak for more money, because he knows the tricks of how the Treasury work and he's going to be able to spot things such as that? So I think that it will be interesting to see the dynamic between Sajid Javid and his successor as Chancellor, Rishi Sunak. I think having that Treasury experience can be really helpful when you are a departmental minister having to work with the Treasury on funding. And I mean, I think as a general rule, most Secretary of States, despite you know, their support of Thatcherism or the fiscal conservatives, will want money for their departments. So I think he could play that to his advantage. I think in terms of how he has previously worked, I think James is right when it comes to, obviously, these COVID restrictions. We know what his instinct is. But it's also the case that when he previously made the comments that he was, you know, I think it was last spring, that he would run the economy hot in terms of restrictions, that was obviously thinking with his former chancellor hat on. And now he's going to have to look at things in terms of the health department. So I do think he will be more hawkish than Matt Hancock, but it's clearly going to be different things you're having to weigh up. And when it comes to things like the COVID backlog, I mean, as you've read about, Isabel, the in-tray is completely bulging when it comes to the decisions he is going to have to make. And I think that that does mean it. While Sajid Javid is someone who is seen as someone who supports the slim down stay, I just think we're quite in a quite unique period. So old beliefs, we can't necessarily go on for how they're going to focus on everything.
James, what does Sajid Javid's appointment say about the Boris Johnson administration more widely? He obviously exited government after refusing to accept the conditions that were being imposed on him as Chancellor by Boris Johnson and by Dominic Cummings, who has again been tweeting over the weekend about how this is a bad idea and there needs to be hashtag regime change. Obviously, things have changed since Dominic Cummings has left. Does it show that there's a slightly different way of directing ministers now, that there's less control, perhaps?
I think that's the right question, in that I don't think Sajid Javid would have come back if Dominic Cummings was still in number 10. I think the kind of combination of those two would have prevented it. That either Sajid Javid would not have been able to accept the conditions, or Dominic Cummings would have blocked the appointment in the first place. I think ever since Dominic Cummings left Downing Street, it's been clear that Sajid Javid was going to come back in a reshuffle at some point soon. I think it is interesting that he's come back not in a great office of state, but in the Department of Health. It is probably what the most important government position, aside the Grace Officers of State at the moment. But he has come back, but not at the same cabinet rank as before. I think it will be very, very interesting to see how he handles the job. As Katie said, he's a former chancellor. He's also, in his experience of going into the Home Office after the Windrush scandal brought down Amber Rudd, has an idea of, you know, coming into a department in a certain amount of chaos. But I wonder as well whether perhaps his most relevant experience when we're talking about social care will be the fact that he was Communities and Local Government Secretary. So he has seen how the social care system doesn't work in terms of that link up, and whether that will shape his views. I think Katie is completely right about how, however fiscally conservative ministers are, they tend to regard their department as a special case that needs money. And I mean, there is going to be a really big question. We've already seen this with the Kevin Collins row over education catch-up funding, which is, you know, how, you know, the public finances have been put under huge pressure and strain by COVID. How do you decide what you are going to prioritise in terms of clearing backlogs? I think that that is going to be the dominant political issue of the autumn ahead of a spending review.
Katie, there are still a lot of questions around Matt Hancock, and not least his appointment of Gina Colodangelo to non-executive director in the Department of Health. She's now resigned from that position. But there's also questions about the CCTV and how this footage existed in the first place, given Hancock apparently didn't realise he was being filmed in his office, but how also it came into the public domain. What's going on there?
Yeah, as you say, I think there's a few different aspects to it. So you now have lots of cabinet ministers asking, well, do I have CCTV in my office that I'm not aware of? I think Robert Buckland has been quite public about that this morning on the morning round. He said to Kay Burley that you know, he had asked on Friday, am I being filmed? Now, I think it's interesting because you've seen Keir Starmer, the Labour leader's response as well. Is it really that surprising? There's lots of CCTV footage, given that most, you know, parts of Parliament, you would expect some surveillance. But I think there's definitely unease amongst cabinet ministers as to this development. Obviously, there's some calling for a formal inquiry into how this all came to pass. I do think it's an interesting one because I think from parts of Robert Buckland's morning round this morning, which I don't think was one of the easiest ones he's had to do in his time in the cabinet, for the government to balance it, I think there's obviously security questions about this if cabinet ministers don't know, and, you know, who put the camera there, but that needs to be looked into. But I think when ministers zone in on this too much when they're giving interviews, you can be left with the impression that they think what went wrong here is not so much Matt Hancock's actions as the fact there was a CCTV camera. And therefore, while I think there's going to have to be a look into what the security breach was and how it came about, I do think ministers have to be a bit careful about their public priorities on this.
James, there are some interesting national security questions here, and there's also been a debate over the weekend about the Wilson Doctrine and whether cabinet ministers should expect to be taped in one way or another in their offices. What do you make of it all?
I think I'm right in saying there's no audio that accompanies these pictures. So it's not quite the same as kind of bugging telephone calls. I think the question here is, who has access to this footage? It obviously, given the fact it leaked, is not particularly secure. In a way, we're lucky that this footage was given to a newspaper rather than to a hostile state that might have attempted it to use it to blackmail people. I think CCTV in buildings, you would expect. I think a CCTV in your own personal office is a bit of a surprise. But I think Katie is right that, like, if cabinet ministers try and turn the question of CCTV cameras into their offices into the story, it will look like that they think that is the problem, not the questions of behaviour that have been raised.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.